Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network. I am your host, Robert Rogers, the founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2004. We're talking 20 years ago. We are dedicated to provide information, support, and for individuals who currently experience symptoms associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, as well as their family members. I have a spectacular program for you to listen to today. My guest is Alice Holstein, who is an author and has an incredible story of recovery to discuss with you. She is a true inspiration. Alice, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you, Robert. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to share my thoughts with you today. This is a little bit of a new experience, even though we're taking a second run at getting a decent production. But I'm just excited about having the chance to share what I'm about and what I've been through and hopefully what it might mean to other people.
I have a number of questions that I prepared to ask you, Alice, but first tell us just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm talking to you from La Crosse, Wisconsin, where it's an early spring. I live in a fifth-floor apartment, and I'm able to see the Mississippi River from where I live, and my office faces that Mississippi River. I'm fortunate to have that kind of a view and a circumstance for doing my work. I was raised in La Crosse, but left for 40 years. I first of all joined the Air Force, and I'm proud to say that I was the first woman to brief satellite photography, the first woman to run a combat intelligence shop for a B-52 nuclear mission, and the first woman to be sent overseas to Guam and Okinawa for Vietnam operations. After the Air Force, I came to Colorado and went to graduate school, working full-time while I worked on a master's degree and a doctorate in group dynamics and organization development. After graduation, I was self-employed as a consultant, and I dealt with some 85 clients. I also was a college instructor. The incidence of my working that way was true for 20 years of success until my illness grabbed hold of me. I will tell you more about that illness soon. Otherwise, I am unmarried, had no children. I was married for a while. I consider myself a wise elder. My birthday of 81 years is tomorrow. I have a great support system. I live a very active life. The word retired does not exactly fit me. I am working on another book called Bipolar Soul Journey, Stories of Survival and Grace. That's sort of a brief introduction, Robert.
Alice Holstein, what is the essence of your dramatic recovery story and how you gained your expertise about healing, not curing mental illness? What were its costs?
Well, I consider that it was extremely expensive. But in terms of the detail of the illness itself, I had some 17 manic episodes, 15 hospitalizations in psych wards, excessive spending sprees, which are symptomatic of bipolar mood disorder, by the way. I took many cross-country travels, which are also symptomatic. I had 12 years of intense suffering off and on, including abject loneliness, little emotional support, unable to hold a job even though I tried periodically. I lived as a homeless person for 6 to 8 months, though I did have assets. I just could not or did not tap them. The dollar amount for the illness I estimate at $1 million, $500,000 for my hospital bills, spending sprees, cars bought and not needed, messes created that needed to be cleaned up, lost income, Social Security affected. Another cost estimate comes from those who served me, including medical and hospital expenses, police and crisis term services, caseworker help, judges for Chapter 51 circumstances, county legal help, etc. So those were the basics of what happened to me and how I dealt with it financially and some of the repercussions for this community and others where I was hospitalized and treated.
Alice, how did you manage to survive while living periodically on the street in your 60s?
Well, it wasn't easy. Many people helped me at just the right time, Robert. There was a man in a laundry in Minneapolis, for example, who saw me sorting through socks in order to use them as mittens in the winter and gave me $20 without me asking, and that bought me the ride to the next homeless shelter. There was a man in New Mexico who saw me acting strangely at a gas station and came up and knelt beside the car and warned me that the police in that town were not friendly to people who were acting strangely. So he invited me to go with him to eat pizza at his house, and I took the risk of doing that. And then he gave me a blanket to rest a little bit, and I stayed and left early morning so that I was safe for a while. I also stayed in shelters, and I lied one time to get into a battered women's shelter. I also employed sheer guts to survive. By that, I mean I cried myself to sleep at night in order to purge myself of the fear and the loneliness. I walked all night to keep warm sometimes. I went hungry 8 days one time and six another. I received a pair of thick-soled tennis shoes from a homeless shelter worker. I also had some miracles along the way, such as a pair of Oxfords just my size lying along the road when I was beginning to walk in a snowstorm in Colorado Springs. A pair of thick gloves on a park bench appeared along with a windbreaker wrapped around a tree while I was out in a rainy night in La Crosse. Also, my caseworker would not give up on me. She helped save my life. And then a couple in Los Angeles took me in for a whole week when I had car troubles. They said that they were just Christian people who believed in helping people, and they most certainly did help me. So those are some of the reasons that I survived, was with a lot of help and the grace of some higher power.
How do you think that mental illness and Parkinson's might have some similarities?
Well, First of all, I think that many people who have Parkinson's suffer from depression. And depression is often a huge part of mental illness, especially my illness, which is bipolar mood disorder. What I have to share about that then may be very helpful to those of you who might be dealing with depression. So that's one comparison. Secondly, I surmise that those who suffer with Parkinson's are often given the opinion that you have a bleak future. I too was told that initially, that I would face a difficult path and that heavy medication was needed. Eventually, I got mad at the doctors and decided I would be as well as I could be. And that intention, by the way, was what kept me going for years, because the intention meant that doors kept opening that exposed me to various healing modes that I used in my wellness journey. Finally, Dr. Rogers' research seems to indicate that alternative treatments are helping some 2/3 to 3/4 of you to either stay the same or improve in your wellness. Adding to the list of things to try, based upon my experience, might be helpful to your well-being. So those are the comparisons that I see and hope will make it a worthwhile experience for you to think about the ways that my illness, which seems like a far fetch from Parkinson's, but which there really are some comparisons that make some sense.
Since Parkinson's is often associated with depression, what did you do to deal with depression?
Well, I used a light box sometimes. I hope that people might know what a light box is. They can be purchased for a minimal fee and require looking into the light generated by them for 20 to 30 minutes a day. They can be quite effective. I also particularly use something called the Emotional Freedom Technique. EFT is the abbreviation for it. And it's an upper body tapping procedure. It's available for free on the internet and can be learned there. It's a rather simple technique that was greeted with suspicion when first introduced because it is so simple. Now it has become a certified course of instruction for psychology practitioners in the Department of Veterans Affairs. I used EFT to break a major depression one time, and I also used it to tap my way through some PTSD that was caused by some of the crazy things I did in the course of my illness. The tapping on the depression was given to me by a woman instructor who was well trained in the procedure, and I was fortunate enough to spend the better part of a day participating with her and some other learners in order to get a good dose of that particular approach. Going to the PTSD, there were indeed crazy behaviors that I had done as a person with bipolar mood disorder, and I could hardly bear the truth of certain things, or I was required to clean up messes I had created. I strongly recommend you learn this tactic and try it religiously for a while. You cannot tap just once and get results. At least I could not. Any issue you tap, such as depression, requires some repetitive tapping. It really has been an effective tool for many people for all kinds of ailments, whether or not it's physical, emotional, mental, or what have you. It really has some great merit as far as I am concerned personally and as far as other people are concerned in terms of their opinions of it.
Alice, what are some of the other things you did to get well in general?
I did a whole slew of things to get well. I think some of those helped my depression, by the way, but I cannot prove the exact linkage because I tried so many things and it was not a scientific approach. It was a heart approach. It was a gut approach to trying to be open to the things that appeared to me in my intention to get well. Some of the things that I did do include sort of a longish list. By the way, I am not cured, but I am healed in some important ways, and I live a happy, active, if careful, life. I do take medication. That is part of my wellness. I worked with a naturopath to balance my body with food supplements and dietary changes. I developed regular exercise habits. I tried cranial sacral therapy, Reiki circles, informal hands-on healing with friends, lots of body work, whether energy healing, massage, acupressure body work, etc. I tried something unique called the Hellinger Family Constellation work, which is very difficult to explain. It is explained briefly in my small book, A Tough Grace, but it involves working on habits that come from your family experiences as well as sometimes situations that skip generations. It has been quite effective with a number of people in Europe, as well as there was a great movement about Hellinger work in California some years ago. I also worked with a shaman, especially a rebirthing session. I worked with dream work, with EMDR, with music and inspirational tapes, with affirmations and gratitude exercises, with reading a wide variety of healing books and subjects outside of mental illness. I deliberately built relationships. This was one of the things I learned the hard way, that I could not deal with my illness alone. I was a journaler. I kept track of my thoughts and my feelings and learned how I was dealing with life that way. I wrote a book, A Tough Grace, which integrated my experiences and knowledge. And that integration is healing unto itself. It sort of strengthens the discoveries that you've made and the feelings that you've had and your conclusions. I volunteered at a school. This was after I was very, very sick, and I was still unable to work, but it got me out of the house and helped me look forward to life again. Then I went back to work part-time. I became a public speaker as a result of that work. I established also a tight support circle. I changed my mind about my illness by comparing it to the hero's journey. versus being considered as, quote, damaged goods, unquote. People with mental illness are commonly considered to be damaged goods. The stigma around mental illness is huge. I got rid of stress. I reframed everything. I inadvertently worked steadily on total healing and developing my higher consciousness. I consider all of this as transformation or fundamental change.
What are some things you discovered that support alternative treatment methods, Alice?
I love talking about this part of my talk because there are things that most people don't know in the medical community and that I think are very important for healing. One is that a woman by the name of Dr. Candace Pert discovered that emotions exist throughout the body, not merely in the brain. This suggests the wisdom of pursuing various forms of body work. Our emotional wounds become embedded in the body, in other words. Body workers will tell you the issues are in our tissues. Another source of information that I found was from a popular book out that's titled The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. It's heavily oriented to trauma causes, but it's worth taking a look at. The thing about trauma is that it's hard to identify or dig out because trauma is often buried in the unconscious, and it frequently takes special help to recognize and treat. Van der Kolk's research has gone a long ways in uncovering the effects of how our bodies do keep the score. Still another source of insight for me was physicist David Bohm, B-O-H-M, who suggests that insights themselves are healing. That was a surprise to me when I found it, but it makes enormous sense. He thinks that insights change the structure of the brain. This indicates the legitimacy of spending time studying, reading, attending lectures, talking with others, and so forth, to expose yourself to knowledge and insights. Finally, I cannot find the source for the following statement, but there is evidence that the brain is the most sensitive organ, nutritionally speaking. But psychiatry, at least, seldom addresses diet during treatment, and most definitely does not consider other things that affect brain chemistry, such as beliefs, imagery, music, energy work, and more. In general, there is lots we don't know about various illnesses and their cause. And in general, the medical model's disease-based method or approach is other than a wellness mode. It relies mostly on the scientific method, drugs, and expensive focus on the latest technology. In my case, the role of stress was largely hidden to me for years until we recognized that stress was often the trigger for my manic episodes. I now live a careful life to be on the alert for stress.
Alice, what part did going back to work at age 65 have to do with your recovery?
Well, I feel like I was lucky, like I had a second chance at life, because I was on disability at the time, and I wasn't happy about that. And so it gave me a renewed purpose and meaning to find that I could work again. It helped restore my battered self-esteem. I did the work part-time as a peer support specialist for the Department of Veterans Affairs. I could handle that part-time, and it had been preceded by the volunteering at the school. But I conclude that from these two things, you must find and do something purposeful, regardless of your limitations. If all you can do is to call shut-ins who might be lonely, then do that. But find other opportunities if you can. Do not think of yourself as an invalid. It is in the giving that we receive, but you taking the initiative to help others is critical. In my case, that VA work as a peer support specialist included public speaking, which in turn resulted in the invitation to serve on several community boards where I represented the voice of lived experience. I also wrote the small book, A Tough Grace, Mental Illness as a Spiritual Path, which I used when I was speaking and which was used in a college class as a supplementary text. I also spoke at a state NAMI conference doing a keynote address. NAMI stands for National Association of Mental Illness.
What did participating in a spiritual companioning preparation program contribute?
Well, this was another situation of good fortune of being in the right place at the right time. My participation in this program at age 72 was a challenge because of its rigor and the studying required in addition to my work at the VA. It was a demanding experience, but very supportive. The whole program was geared to helping you succeed and was run by a spirituality center initiated by Catholic nuns, even though it included students from diverse denominations. Before this experience, I felt as though I still was not at my best, creatively and energetically. But this program did what I called, quote, loved me back to life. I conclude from this that you must keep positive, loving people around you. Love matters in wellness. It matters extremely strongly. And the kind of company you keep is vital to your well-being.
You made reference to the hero's journey earlier. Why might the hero's journey be important to wellness?
Well, this was one of my accidental discoveries also. It was enormously helpful. I originally discovered it by accident watching a video, but it had been well not documented by Joseph Campbell, who found it to be a universal worldwide experience that could be defined as a process of tests and trials that had three main stages. Those stages were, first of all, departure from all that is known. Secondly, initiation into all aspects of testing, being tested, I should say. And thirdly, return with a boon or gifts for others in the world. There's a complete listing of some 17 substations, if you Google it. I discovered it by accident watching that video, but then identifying myself with this hero aspect. This was so important to me because people with mental illness, as I said before, are considered as damaged goods. Ain't it awful we have these conditions are a popular conception. Knowing about this severe testing caused me to redefine myself as a hero who had been conducting a journey of the highest esteem and honor. I thus changed my mind about who I was and what I could do as a person with an illness who was not damaged goods. I suggest that many of you are also conducting a hero's journey worthy of the highest esteem and honor. My gifts that I brought back from the trials and tribulations are revolutionary ways to consider and treat mental illness. They have affected many through my books and speaking and writing. A postscript to this point is that since the original broadcast of this material, I have been reading a book about the heroine's journey, which is the woman's take on this, and is somewhat different than the hero's journey. But it was the hero's journey with which I identified as so involved with the trials and tribulations and which made me say to myself that I was a hero rather than a damaged goods product.
Alice Hosting, what do you mean exactly when you say mental illness is a whole person illness?
Well, this is another one of my discoveries, Robert. What I mean by that is that I discovered my healing required working at five different levels: mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, and by that I do not mean religious, and finally social. The medical model does not treat us holistically. We have to create that for ourselves. For example, you have to believe and think and learn with your mind when you're talking about getting well. As I said before, there's evidence that insights alone can be healing. So you must use your mind in order to find those insights. You must actively seek information that feeds your brain and mind. In other words, you must understand your illness. At the emotional level, things such as therapy and body work can make a huge difference in how you feel about yourself and life. The physical level includes diet and exercise, which are terribly important for healing. A friend of mine, a masseuse, says that exercise is the secret to effective pain management and muscle strength. What I also know in terms of healing is that what you put in your mouth goes directly to the brain. Therefore, diet and eating healthy is incredibly important. At the spiritual level, I don't mean religion per se, but rather a belief system or attitude that works for you. The social level is terribly important as well and is seldom considered by medicine at all. It suggests that we all need a support system, people who care about us and can be positive in that caring. I learned about this the hard way. I was a single woman without family and I was a loner by nature. I was unanchored and not rooted to anything. I learned the hard way that I needed caring people in my circle, and I have them there now. And yes, I am suggesting that Parkinson's is a whole person illness as well. I am biased about the idea that all illnesses can or should be treated holistically.
My follow-up question for you is, what do you mean by saying that suffering can be a purifying experience?
One moment, Robert. The fact that people suffer for various reasons is a universal condition. People who suffer from Parkinson's frequently suffer profoundly, but how we hold that suffering is what can make a difference in our wellness. I found an important book titled A Monk in the World by Wayne Teasdale that opened my eyes on this subject. In it, he says that suffering scrapes away, or can, all that does not matter about who we are and how we live in the world. Suffering can open our heart and cause us to shift our priorities. It can deepen our experience and focus us on what is really important. It can throw us into utter simplicity, finding the things that really matter, inviting us to change and grow. It confronts us with our mortality and deepens our humility. It can develop us spiritually and, for some, religiously. It can contribute to our psychological growth and take us to a higher consciousness. I believe when we hold suffering in this manner, we are less likely to feel sorry for ourselves, which can be a defeatist attitude. We are more likely to see the good in suffering when we realize that the suffering can contribute to our mental, emotional health and growth. Teasdale's thoughts on this matter are in Chapter 8 of this book, A Monk in the World. I found them invaluable, and I see now that my illness has brought me many gifts, which are enumerated in my 2011 book, A Tough Grace.
How do you maintain your wellness?
Carefully. I first of all give it my top priority. I eat a healthy diet. I exercise regularly with an exercise class 2 times a week. Chair yoga weekly. And I use an elliptical in the fitness center in my apartment complex about 4 times a week. I stay involved with friends, with church, and with volunteering. I am on the board of the local mental health coalition and visit a friend who lives in assisted living weekly. I am uniquely careful of stress. I also have a nightly prayer and gratitude regime, and an extraordinary small group of people whom I call my circle of love. They are 3 people with whom I have regular contact, including email or phone. They help assure that I am living well, not overstressing, and not becoming manic. They have permission to talk with each other if they see or hear anything unusual in my behavior. I conclude there is nothing like love from other healthy people to stay well. They also help me become a more aware and growing person through our sharing.
Excellent. Alice Holstein, what was the hardest part of dealing with your illness?
The biggest pill to swallow was that I felt like I was grieving over a number of years because I was unable to fulfill my potential. That grief eventually changed to acceptance of what the illness had done for me in a positive sense. And it changed even more as I regained my purpose, meaning, and creativity. But the years of grieving over the loss of my potential was the hardest thing I had to deal with.
And on the other side of the coin, what is the largest gift you have received from surviving and thriving?
I was pushed to ever deeper inner work in the course of my journey. And now in my 70s and 80s, I do claim to be a wise elder because of that inner work. I've become a whole and healthy person through the difficulties that I've been forced to deal with. It's been something that makes me say I would not have wanted to become the person I was becoming before my illness. It has done so much for me to make me a better person, a more understanding person, a more empathetic person, a more helpful person, just a whole and healthy person.
Tell everybody about your two books and how a person with Parkinson's symptoms might be interested in reading them.
The two books are A Tough Grace and Reframing Mental Illness. They can mainly help you indirectly, but I think importantly, to deal with Parkinson's. The first half of A Tough Grace, which is a fast read in a small book, is specifically my story of dealing with the extreme hardships of my illness. But it is an inspiring story. The second half of the book, however, contains a listing of the things I used to heal myself. There were some 50 in all, including some in-depth explanations of several interesting modes, such as that Hellinger family constellation work that I mentioned earlier. The remaining parts of the book outline the gifts that I gleaned from my experience, which are applicable to anyone with any kind of illness if they reframe their experiences. The last half of the book also describes how I came to a sense of wholeness within myself. The more recent work, Reframing Mental Illness, is more like a workbook than a volume you would sit down and read straight through. It contains 160 vignettes, which are short descriptions of my experience, plus several reflection questions for each vignette to help you consider how you might reframe the situation. Over half of these tidbits and the reflections are generic to illness in general. So even people who do not suffer illnesses per se find personal growth from using the book. Both books are available from Amazon, easily reachable by following the link on my website. The 1992 book that is displayed there is named Beyond Turmoil, which was written in my married name, Mac. It does not address illness in general, but it describes stages and issues involved in the midlife inner journey. It was endorsed by Ram Dass, the Spiritual Emergency Network, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and it has resulted in some profound healing effects for some readers. The way to get the books is to go to the website, www.aliceholstein.net, and there is a link that will take you from there directly to the Amazon site where you can find the books.
Alice, could you please spell the name of your website very slowly for listeners?
Yes, it is www.alicehholstein.net. www.aliceholstein.net.
It is indeed. Thank you, Alice. And how can listeners reach you in the future?
There is an email address at the website. Also of interest at that website is an essay titled Heal Yourself and You Heal the Culture, which I wrote several years ago. Note that the title does not say cure yourself. It says heal yourself and heal the culture. There's a difference in being cured of something and being healed. To find the essay, go on the website to something called the sitemap, and there you will look for the title, Heal Yourself and Heal the Culture. I'd like to add something before we wrap up here, Robert, which is that I don't in any way claim that what I've shared with you will cure Parkinson's. But I did note in a previous broadcast that you and your research have identified things that people are doing already that make a difference. Some two-thirds to three-fourths of you are finding that some things that you've been doing either are causing you to stay the same or to improve, which is pretty powerful information. I'm hoping that the things that you've been doing are aligned with the things that I have been talking about, because you are already using things like walking, Qigong, treadmills, massage, acupuncture, medication, dietary supplements, CBD oil, shamanism, and EMDR. Perhaps some of the things I have done are also applicable to your wellness as well.
Alice, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on the show and with this amazing and inspirational presentation that will inspire thousands.
I wish the best to all of you. Keep working at wellness.
And that's what's happening here on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are, of course, handsome, and all of the children are profoundly loved. Know that by taking the time to listen to this amazing presentation by Alice Holstein, that you indeed are journeying down the road to recovery using your good intuition, your insights, and your best judgments about what types of options are the best ones for you to pursue. Thank you so much for taking the time to be a listener of Parkinson's Recovery Radio.